Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are live. It is the 14th day of April 2015. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, the multimedia real-time experience that is the Horn chat room. Pop on over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and password, and well, you'll be part of a rollicking, rousing conversation that takes place every evening about this time. Good evening to Gerald and Jeremy in Vermont, who informs me loud and clear on TuneIn. Good evening, Chug a Punch. Good evening, Texas T. Good evening, Truth Seeker. And good evening to longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator, Sparky. So, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, indeed. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And, of course, Titanic Tuesday is so named, as I try to remind us periodically, every Tuesday, that's periodically. It is named it's a day when we celebrate the Titanic intellect of right-wingers all over Merca. Remember, Merca is the greatest country in the world on Earth. Yes. It was named, Titanic Tuesday was, by our buddy Jim, who tuned in one morning, to the 962nd level right-wing talker over in Beckley, who is sadly no longer on the air. Damn. Oh, damn. Just damn. But anyway, he was back then, and one day, one morning, one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers called in and asked, "Steve, why is it ye figure there's seashells in rocks in West Virginia? We ain't got no beach nowhere near by us." To which he replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Still no word, not so much as a peep on the movement of the Titanic table linens. None. So we celebrate grand moments in right-wing stupidity every Tuesday here on the Horn. It's a little bit of a carryover from Moran Monday, I guess you could say. But by the time Titanic Tuesday arrives, there have been so many more Titanic right-wing idiots out there that, well, Moran Monday is little more than a memory. That's exactly what it is, as a matter of fact, a memory. Misty, watercolored memory. No. And, by the way, before we jump into it, a gentle reminder and some thank yous. I want to thank Chris overnight, Chris in Germany, who provided a Have a Show on Me for this evening. Thank you very kindly, Chris. It is much, much appreciated and helps us. I said we were going to count down from the weekly fundraising goal instead of the evening's fundraising goal. And so, as a consequence, that leaves us. And let's see. He did to be to carry the 12. Yeah, 2 and 2 and 43,000. And that leaves us with a little over $300 to raise coming up on the week, which is awesome. Which means I've been paying bills already, and hopefully we will pay more as we move toward the end of the week. Hopefully, at some point, maybe getting out in front a little bit, which is mighty nice. Gerald pointing out, hey, Bob, I do believe that you can view Titanic plates at the Smithsonian. There's probably some tableware there, too. Ooh, I hadn't thought about that. You can see all sorts of things, of course, we know, at the Smithsonian. You can see the Koch Brothers exhibit at the Museum of Natural History, which tells us, you may recall from a recent story, tells us that in the future humans will either be tall and muscular like giraffes or short and really sweaty because climate change. Or maybe you can run into that Smithsonian paid flack who believes in the Salutrian theory, whereby it was really white Europeans who populated the Americas. Yeah. Don't get me started. But anyone wishing to help out and push the fundraising forward for the week, well, you're welcome to jump in alongside Chris, who provided this evening's Have a Show on Me. The PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. Everything counts. $1, $5, $10, $15, all the way up to Have a Show on Me at $150. Thank you very kindly, all who help out. We were limited by the constraints of the PayPal widget, so just kind of blow past some of those more embarrassingly personal questions we ask there, and just get, it's all about getting to the next screen. That's all it's about. Okay. All right, strap in, get the hockey puck out. They have there is just a walking attention tantrum over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and while I hate to give them free publicity, some of this stuff you can't make up and you can't just blow past. Oh, by the way, just one quick thing, just one little observation of life in Merca. I've gotten New York Times news alerts for so long I can't remember when I first signed up for them, but whatever. I was out on the road earlier today, and in fact I've been on the road all day long, and I was I forget where I'd stopped, but my phone went ping, and I looked down and I saw the words breaking news: Google expected to face antitrust charges. And I don't know if this is just a comment on the way my mind works or realities, but I immediately knew that it did not mean in the United States. We don't do that anymore, do we? I think if we tried to use our Sherman antitrust law, it would probably crumble into a million dusty, tiny pieces, wouldn't it? But no, I was right. It was not. No. Nobody said that would be mean. That wouldn't be sufficiently obsequious toward the ongoing miracle that is capitalism in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth. Yeah. No, the EU is apparently going to charge Google with antitrust violations, which is okay by me. It's kind of nice to see corporate giants getting at least a little bit humbled here and there. In this particular instance, the charge will stem from allegations that Google uses its online search dominance to advance its own online services over the services of others. Okay. The New York Times citing anonymous sources in Brussels who say that the charge will be one of Google's having abused its position. You know, antitrust stuff, like we don't do here in Merca. Anyway, back over, and we got a couple of these, so let's just get over it. Back over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, where you might recall Andrea Tarantula, who once said that Eric Holder runs the Department of Justice like the Black Panthers. That really is her greatest hit. I mean, that's her video killed the radio star moment. That's, yeah. But of course, that's not what she's on about now. She is, of course, being a Fox News TV Radio Rwanda attack lady. She's mad at Hillary Clinton. Now, once again, this is not the neoliberal apology network. Never has been, never will be. But you kind of got to go, what, Edith, huh? When you see something like this. This all happened on the squalid little program they call Outnumbered. And it had to do, because, you know, this is where they are, it had to do with where Secretary Clinton and her aide had lunch? Yeah, really, had lunch.
Everybody ready? Hillary Clinton holding her first campaign event for 2016 today in Iowa. Bong! Clinton advisors tell Fox News the Democratic frontrunner plans to earn every...
Well, there's our answer. Bong!
Bong! Clinton advisors tell Fox News the Democratic frontrunner plans to earn every vote as she ramps up her campaign in this two-day swing through the Hawkeye State. Right now, she's taking a small-scale approach, traveling cross-country in this Uncle Rico-style panel van.
The big reveal.
There it is, everybody. Wow, ooh, it is. Scooby. It's like Uncle Rico's van, but black.
Uncle Rico? Uncle Rico. Oh, maybe they had it. Maybe they. I don't know.
And in keeping the every woman image, she stopped at a Chipotle for a burrito bowl.
A Chipotle. She stopped at a Chipotle. I wonder if that's anything like a Chipotle. We'll never know. But she stopped there at Chipotle. Maybe she stopped for the Halcon Calliope music. Hard to say. Chipotle.
At Chipotle outside Toledo.
Okay, so we know it wasn't just a one-off. No, she can't say Chipotle. Right. Chipotle. It's one of those knockoff joints. Kind of like going into a bookstore and ordering Nicholas Nickleby by Charles Dickens with two K's, the noted Dutch author. Chipotle. Oblivious. Completely oblivious.
And in keeping the every woman image, she stopped at a Chipotle for a burrito bowl at Chipotle outside Toledo. But apparently no one recognized her. So Kennedy, the incognito burrito, someone said on Twitter that she and Huma looked hungover.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, you can always trust what somebody says on Twitter, that she and Huma looked hungover. I don't know if I, you know what, maybe if I live long enough, I'll be a septuagenarian sitting there in the living room, rocking away in the Barca lounger, Agnes and me, and just kind of watching the Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda.
Yeah, honey, you know what, that Andrea Tarantula, she's got her finger on the pulse, doesn't she? Thank God we don't have any of those heathen Chipotles over here in Appalachistan.
I don't know if there's a single Chipotle anywhere here in West Virginia. We've got their knockoff, not quite so awesome cousin Qdoba. Don't even get an apostrophe between the Q and the D, but yeah. We've got Qdoba here, and they're kind of a low rent Chipotle. Anyway,
with the big glasses and the shades on,
extra guac.
Was this the best way to connect with a chicken burrito bowl?
It's just so real. You know, she's like, listen, I want some food of the people, but I don't want it to be icky. I don't want it to be too ethnic. Is there some?
Huh? Okay, maybe I'm just totally missing this. Is this supposed to be funny? I don't want it to be too icky, too ethnic. Right, because they're just passing around bowls of fried chitterlings there at the outnumbered set. Got it. Don't want to be too ethnic.
The middle ground we can find, and then went, yeah, let's go to Chipotle. Got to eat off this hangover. Yeah, I think what that says is the First Lady is quite ordinary looking in person.
You know, Chipotle, over there right next to Starbucks. Yeah. Which is next door to Jack in the Bix. Right. Everybody's getting in on it. Steve in New York pointing out. Oh, you mean over there next to Narns and Bobel, right? I think we're wearing on Steve a little bit early in the program. Sorry, man. Really sorry. Fuck these people! I understand. I really, really do. Chipotle. Professional broadcasting. Because they get all their emphases on the right syllables. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hammer, yeah. If this were her husband, flashback to when he ran for president, he was in workout clothes, he swung by the McDonald's, he'd be in there going, I'll take the carnitas.
Not just that, he'd
supersize
it. And be proud of it, too, and walk out there with a headline. I am stunned that we do not see headlines from Chappaqua into the state of Iowa. But here's what I think. She's going to be a good candidate. She learned a lot from 2008. She's going to raise a lot of money. She will get heavy support from women. But will she inspire?
I got no better clue than you do. Do they just drop acid and turn the cameras on? I don't know. Oh, well, hey, I had no idea. Apparently, and thank you for the information. I'll remember this because you know next time Huntington, West Virginia has a Chipotle. Jesus, I hope that doesn't stick, and I don't start saying Chipotle. Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you very kindly. You know, next time I'm wanting to be ethnic but not too icky. Good Good Lord. I agree, Jim. They sound like the Stygian witches looking for the eye.
Oh, God.
Nothing like getting things started with a little on Titanic Tuesday with a little classical humor. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, damn, these are some of the meanest, nastiest assholes on TV. That's why they love Rand Paul and the rest of the clown car. So if, and bless her heart, Mika Brzezinski called Marco Rubio a little boy. Precious. So if Marco Rubio stops at Chipotle, will they say that he was trying to connect with the ethnic, non-icky potential vote? Of course, Marco Rubio will never be seen anywhere near a Chipotle because that would, the Republicans, let's just say, and the birthers and deathers and ninthers and tenthers and baggers and birchers and booger eaters and libertarians, generally Republicans, they wouldn't understand. Because some of the baggers are already going birther on Marco Rubio. And what would Andrea Tarantula say if Ted Cruz was seen? That then again, they don't sell anointed burritos there at Chipotle, do they? Now at Baya Vowel Qdoba, they got a thing called a smothered burrito, but not an anointed.
Will she get people to come out and vote who otherwise would not? Mm-hmm. Watch that.
Yeah.
What do you think? Was it maybe Hispanic outreach? Oh. She heard Rubio was announcing, so she thought, let's go to a Chipotle and get some pico de gallo.
Thank you to our dear friends at Right Wing Watch for taking one for the team and watching Outnumbered so as to get that classic clip of Hillary hate. And if this is where they are, 2 days after Mrs. Clinton's announcement, Jesus, I don't know. They may be fully engaged in some sort of voodoo incantations against her by the time, let's see, it's 11, short 7, and 12, 17, 19 months from now, or 18 and a half, when November 2016 rolls around. Jesus, it's 18 months? Yeah, like I said on Facebook a couple of days ago, I've got this creepy, creepy feeling that I'm going to spend the next year and a half broadcasting live from a vat of bleach. Yeah. But then again, no, there won't be any anointed burritos for Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz only eats at churches. Yeah, you get it? He only eats at churches? Come on. A little love here? Tough crowd. But, you know, that was just some low-rent hatred. The good stuff hasn't even really started yet. Oh, no. By the way, just in case you were wondering, a little update to the Walter Scott case. I need to offer up a correction. I sit here and pull together a program most every evening, and I read all kinds of news sources from all over the place. And generally speaking, I try to read two or three different stories on any given topic just to see if all the facts match up. And one of the things that came out in the opening days of the Walter Scott murder, and it was murder there in North Charleston, South Carolina, numerous news outlets reported that Walter Scott may have run from Officer Slager because he had an outstanding warrant for his arrest for failure to pay child support. It went from that to an outright allegation that there was a bench warrant out for Walter Scott in the amount of $18,000 for non-payment of child support. On Sunday or thereabouts, maybe it was Saturday, I found out that that was not true. There was no bench warrant out for Walter Scott for $8 or $18,000. But of course, it's sort of, you know, there's an old one-liner out there. I forget who said it, but he said, you know, sometimes I like to masturbate words into conversations, whether I know what they mean or not. And apparently that's what happens whenever an unarmed black man gets gunned down by police in this country. The for-profit media begin masturbating allegations into the story, whether they turn out to be real or not. I participated, I would hope to say innocently, by reporting the things that other news outlets were reporting that was wrong. And I apologize for that. I don't apologize in case you were offended. I don't apologize if any of you took it the wrong way. I just apologize because I like to get things right. And I actually try to. I got that one really, really wrong. I don't know how many others have apologized for it, but I don't really have to worry about them. I got to worry about this little rickety little radio network. And I apologize. That having been said, there are a couple of updates. There is now audio, and I'm not going to play it, of Officer Slager laughing after he gunned the life out of Walter Scott. The person who was riding with Walter Scott, his passenger, a man by the name of Pierre Fulton, has finally spoken. Pierre Fulton said in a statement, "Walter was a dear friend, and I miss him every day. Over the past 5 years, he helped me to become a better man and showed me the value of hard work. I'll never know why he ran, but I know he didn't deserve to die. Please keep Walter and his family in your prayers and respect my privacy moving forward." So the questions keep piling up. One question. One question which has been answered is that apparently Michael Slager will not face the death penalty, which South Carolina has no trouble doling out at all to other people. South Carolina will not pursue the death penalty for Michael Slager. That having been reported in the last 24 hours or so. And I don't support the death penalty, so there will be no outrage here. The outrage about the death penalty is that anyone in this country is ever subjected to it. Jeremy in Vermont noting, truth be told, Bob, I fell for the bench warrant thing, too. Thanks for the corrective post, which put me back on the right path. Crooks and Liars reported it. Not sure how many, like I said, how many other news outlets have issued their own corrections. So I suppose we will simply have to watch and wait to see how this case proceeds. Well, some of us will watch and wait. Others, however, have already decided what the outcome of the Slager case should be. Yeah, back we go into the swamp, to wit, Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. We'll be there in a minute. Here we go. What you're about to hear is, again, from Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. It's from that circular morning thing they do. And you're about to hear from noted legal scholar Jerry Rivera, who, well, goes by Geraldo Rivera. When he started out in TV, he was Jerry Rivera.
I checked. I cross-referenced my diary. I never married.
It's Geraldo Rivera.
Morning. Been morning.
So, Geraldo, we've been caught up in what's going on in South Charleston, and we're seeing right now for the first time late afternoon there they released the dash cam video before the shooting. So let's take a look together, and what do you pull from this?
Well, I'm extremely glad that they released the dash cam video because it gives context to the event. However horrific and tragic and outrageous the shooting in the back is, it shows that it started as a righteous traffic stop. There was a light out. The driver was acting very hinky, very edgy. He got out of the car, was told to get back in the car. Clearly, the officer involved was checking to see whether there were outstanding warrants.
And do let's remember that in South Carolina and in all 49 other states of the Union, the greatest country in the world on earth. It is a capital offense to act hinky. When one acts hinky, one may expect to be summarily executed by the police. Because, well, hinky don't pay.
The victim knew there was the outstanding warrant for unpaid child support. He bolts. The officer runs after him. The taser comes out.
Hey, look, there's that warrant we were talking about that didn't exist. But what does that matter, huh?
Bolts. The officer runs after him. The taser comes out.
This part we don't see.
You don't see, but there is a reliable eyewitness account that there is a struggle after the taser. So up until that point, the cop with his adrenaline pumping, now he's been in a physical...
Oh, there's hinkiness, which is another way, I suppose, of saying black, and then the officer's adrenaline gets pumping, and, well, what else can you expect?
Physical tussle. Now, the perpetrator has reached for the taser, allegedly. Now it gives you the context of his blood boiling. He has done everything professional, and now he's had...
There was hinkiness and adrenaline. Now there's boiling blood. What's a poor police officer to do?
This civilian has dared to physically have this altercation with the officer.
Okay, so we've got hinky blackness, we've got adrenaline, we got boiling blood, we've got daring. You know, you can also be summarily executed by the police for daring. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, as we found out in Oklahoma, Stan, you can get all dead just for being arrested while you're not really doing anything except the 70-year-old volunteer sheriff's deputy assistant thinks he's reaching for his taser and instead pulls out a revolver and blows you away at point-blank range. Jeremy in Vermont noting, but Bob, the victim did the worst thing anyone in Merca could do. Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth. To wit, driving while black. By the way, F. Geraldo. We got an F. Geraldo vote in from Jeremy in Vermont. We got daring hinkiness, causing blood to boil and adrenaline to pump. Well, you almost begin to feel sorry for the poor Ossifer.
You know, the perpetrator has reached for the taser, allegedly. Now it gives you the context of his blood boiling. He has done everything professional, and now he's had this civilian has dared to physically have this altercation with the officer. Put that in the officer's head now. I think it saves him from the murder rap.
You do.
Even
I do.
Though you see him shooting in the back dead. I mean,
Elizabeth, that's an excellent point. This is a horrible, horrible shooting, but there was no premeditation. This is manslaughter.
Right.
I believe that
okay.
This is manslaughter. And I think that were I the officer's attorney, I would begin the negotiation for that plea immediately.
I don't know whether Mr. Slager would like to have Jerry Rivera or not. You know, if you look at the word manslaughter, it can also be separated into man's laughter, because that's what Officer Slager, with his blood boiling and his adrenaline pumping, having been dared by hinkiness, that's what he did when he was talking to the station shortly after ending the life of Walter Scott. He was laughing. He laughed about it. Yeah, adrenaline. Man's laughter. Manslaughter. Often known as voluntary or involuntary manslaughter. Involuntary being in the instances in which, generally speaking, a death occurs as a result of gross negligence. Voluntary manslaughter being something that happens, or the cause of a death that happens through no real intent. That's sometimes referred to as third degree murder. Second degree murder is, of course, heat of passion murder. That's when we talk about this in human terms. We talk about it in qualities of blood. It's an ancient, archaic, kind of medieval thing, but no, we do. And yet, here's legal expert Geraldo, who has just described the adrenaline pumping, the blood boiling from dealing with the daring hinkiness, which if you argued it in front of a jury would make the jury go, that sounds like heat of passion, second degree murder to me, Myrtle. And Myrtle would say, well, Emory, I do believe you're probably correct. And then Geraldo Rivera, noble pleader, J. Noble Daggett of the East, declares, no, that heat of passion killing is manslaughter. Barbie pointing out, as a white person, I acted hinky every time I got stopped for speeding. I got shot in the back, too, with a ticket. Once I got a little hinkier than usual. My back license plate was missing, and I got shot in my white back with two tickets. Yeah. You know, what was it? Was it last night, the night before? Maybe it was Friday when Jim quoted that old passage that the quality of mercy is not strained. It falleth upon the just and the unjust as the gentle rain from heaven. Not in this country. The quality of mercy is really strained to the breaking point. And if your skin is the wrong color in this country, it's past the breaking point and there just ain't much in the way of mercy. Ron and Raleigh with an observation, subject line, wait a goddamn minute. Hey, Bob, a taillight out is not a moving violation. The officer murderer really had no reason to stop this man. Perpetrator? What the hell did he perpetrate? P.S. Murder because he decided to shoot before he got out of the cruiser. Remember the officer that accidentally killed the man at Fruitvale Station while reaching for his taser? I don't know. In a place like South Carolina, and once upon a time with West Virginia plates upon my automobile, I drove through South Carolina on the way to Hilton Head. And I got my hillbilly ass pulled over in a hurry. And I forget what it was I was doing. But I think in South Carolina, moving violation is whatever Sheriff Buford T. Justice decides it is. So you got a tailor out there, boy. You know? I don't know. I don't know if taillight... Moving violation, probable cause, these are all very fluid terms in the mind of a police officer. Jack in Shreveport pointing out, I had no idea there was even another individual in the car until this morning. Had you heard that before today? What the? It just seems a little bit off to me that wasn't reported as the story broke. Well, I remember when we were first talking about this last week, and Isaac sent along a photograph of the car, and, of course, the crime scene tape was all the way around it, and the photograph was taken from the passenger side, and the passenger side door was open. And I remember either thinking or saying or both, the hell was the passenger side door open? The facts in this case have come out a little bit at a time. And, of course, remember, that Mr. Santana, the 23-year-old who shot the video of Michael Slager murdering, in my opinion, Walter Scott in cold blood, again, in my opinion. Remember, he didn't even turn the video over until the North Charleston Police Department was in full-on tell great big whopping lies mode. Struggle for the taser and yada, yada, yada. And that's when Mr. Santana's conscience began to tickle him. And he went to Walter Scott's family and said, look at this. Take just a second and try to put yourself into Walter Scott's family's shoes in that instant. Because at that point in time, before Mr. Santana shows up, Walter Scott is just another unarmed black man shot by police in this... Wait a minute. The greatest country in the world on earth. That's all he is. And Mama and Daddy may suspect that something was off, something wasn't right, but they know that no one will ever believe them. They know that their son will be portrayed as having attacked an armed to the teeth police officer and having then run from him and then having been justifiably eliminated from this earth for his actions. And then a 23-year-old man from the Dominican Republic, an immigrant, comes to them with a video recording and says, I think you should see this. The news has already covered the story and moved on. Obviously a justifiable homicide, and Officer Slager is on administrative paid leave, and, you know, it's a terrible thing, and we all know it is when a law enforcement officer has to pull his sidearm and discharge it at a citizen. That officer will never be the same again. He'll probably have to have counseling. When in fact, what he'll probably wind up doing is having a few beers. Or maybe a little champagne. I mean, when you get away with it like that, and suddenly everything changes. And suddenly your son is not some miscreant, but in fact the real victim in the case. And then the sliming starts. Bench warrants. Big rims. Deadbeat dad. I saw a little bit of footage from Walter Scott's funeral. They carried his casket away, draped in the flag of the United States of America, because he was, in fact, a Coast Guard veteran. And people were turned away because there wasn't enough room for everybody who wanted to attend the funeral. Yeah. But that's okay, because Fox News TV has prejudged the case for your convenience and declared that Walter Scott had it coming. That child support, that child support can bust your ass. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. According to Reuters, a man is due to go to the death house in Missouri stand. He is a convicted murderer. And Missouri, of course, has the death penalty and may even engage in horizontal crucifixion. Unless a stay is issued, Andre Cole, 52 years old, will be put to death in 9 minutes. 9 minutes. Yeah. In 1995, Andre Cole got a divorce. Shortly thereafter, he fell behind for child support for their two children, and a garnishment was put through for his wages. This is from the pleadings in the case. And they garnished his wages the first time in August of 1998. After that, Andre Cole broke into his ex-wife's home and stabbed his ex-wife and a male in the home. Again and again and again. The ex-wife, he didn't manage to, he tried to stab her to death, but she survived. But the guy, no, he didn't, no. He died. Andre Cole was charged with first-degree burglary, armed criminal action, first-degree assault, and first-degree murder. He is, of course, an African-American man, Andre Cole. He was, of course, condemned to death by an all-white jury. His lawyers have repeatedly argued that he suffers from psychosis, including hallucinations, and that he does not understand why he is being executed. In court proceedings, officials of the state of Missouri have argued, well, so? We don't see no reason why we shouldn't kill him. See, that is a classic law school example of what we were talking about a couple of minutes ago in regard to the theory put forward by that noble pleader, Geraldo Rivera. That's heat of passion murder. That's when it just gets all over you so bad that you can't, your blood boils, your adrenaline pumps, there's hankiness. But the all-white jury said, no, let's call it first degree, premeditated murder. Let's call it that so we can kill him. And here in about 5 minutes, unless something happens to stop it, the people of the state of Missouri will avenge the murder of one man by committing another. My goodness gracious, aren't we just full of mercy and justice in America? The greatest country in the world on earth. Because this is a state case, not a federal case. So if you're not in Missouri, you can feel a little bit better because it's not being done in your name. Yeah. It is indeed Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And Steve in New York City says, this murder is really disconcerting. When is this country going to just take a timeout, go to our respective corners, and calm down? How did we get to be so damned violent? Well, Steve, I would say that we didn't get to be so damned violent. We are so damned violent. Because from the first moment that white Europeans set foot upon this continent, it has been nothing but a steady litany of violence. We soaked this continent in blood before we ever did much anything else. So here it is, 3 minutes before the hour, 2 minutes before the hour. We'll close the filibobster for this Titanic Tuesday. And being as how it is Titanic Tuesday, we have the Green News Report coming up. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And then we will go to the phones and your calls, whomever among you shall decide to make them. You know the numbers. We've got the Herald line, the Maud line. Herald used to be known as the Skype line, but that confused people. So we call it the Herald line now, and that's 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. And then there's Maud, which we also call the Gizmo line, and I hope that doesn't confuse anybody. The Maud line, the Gizmo line, is 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And, of course, if you want to reach out Skype to Skype, you can do that. My contact address on Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And doesn't matter where you are on the planet, as long as you're not firewalled away from Skype, there's no charge involved, and you can get right in contact and have your say right here on the horn. And I want to offer up thanks this evening. Thank you very kindly to Catherine in Arizona. We much appreciate your help this evening. That's two-thirds of a Have a Show on Me this evening to go alongside what Chris did, which takes us down to $215 to go on the week. Thank you, Catherine, very kindly. All right, so we know how to reach the program. By the way, if you prefer not to talk, but would just rather email, and you never have done that before, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com is the email address. You can also reach me on Facebook, Bob Kincaid, on Twitter, @BobKincaid. And if you'd like, you can join the closed horn, the H period, O period, R period, N period, Facebook group. Just send a request out, and we will approve it. Someone will, and you'll be off and running. As Ron and Raleigh notes, sometimes the bumpers, well, they just load themselves. This is Conversation Radio. Listener supported. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The quality of mercy is not strain, y'all.
All right.
Now.
I'll show you how it goes, all right?
Come on.
We sing the quality of mercy. You sing.
Quality of mercy.
Quality of mercy.
The quality of mercy.
The quality of mercy.
Quality of mercy.
The quality of mercy.
The quality
of mercy.
Quality,
but that's not very hard,
mercy.
Right? All right, I'll let you know when that comes in.
Yeah.
All you hypocrites and liars. The temple seeking gain, all your senators and lawyers, with your motives to explain, all you victims and you heroes, your petitions to complain, all your murderers, your martyrs, on the field where you lay, say, on the just and unjust, like it does rain, and the quality of mercy is not strange. Yeah, vengeance and revenge are just two words for pain, yeah. And the quality of mercy is not strange.
Justify the blame.
It's Tuesday, April 14, 2015.
Our government can't control the weather.
Another GOP climate science denier enters the 2016 race.
The threat is real, but so is the opportunity.
And a non-denier jumps in on the Democratic side. Bad news for big coal in China, plus...
Now, under this gag rule, we're not going to be allowed to participate with the other land managers in northern Wisconsin. It's ridiculous.
Florida's denier disease is spreading. Now, officials in Wisconsin barred from work on climate change.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So the private industry gets to acknowledge the obvious science. The government has to pretend to be stupid.
No pretending necessary. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, the Republican clown car continues to fill up as we have yet another entrant into the 2016 race and another denier at that. And it seems like we have a grown-up who entered the race on the Democratic side.
Yeah, and only 18 more months to go.
And about 18 more GOP candidates, but that's just a guess.
Well, first, let's start with Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. He's jumped into the race for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination. 43-year-old Rubio is the third major Republican to declare himself a candidate, joining Texas Senator Ted Cruz and Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. All deny the overwhelming scientific consensus that humans are driving global warming.
I do not believe that human activity is causing these dramatic changes to our climate the way these scientists are portraying it. Climate's always changing. That's not the fundamental question. The fundamental question is whether man-made activity is what's contributing most to it.
Those were comments from Senator Rubio over the last year or two. He used to accept the science and talked about solutions back in 2007 when he first ran for the Senate.
This nation, and ultimately the world, is headed towards emission caps and energy diversification. Florida should become the Silicon Valley of that industry.
Emissions caps and energy diversification. Yeah, that was definitely 2007, back when, you know, John McCain, Sarah Palin, George W. Bush all believed in climate change. That was pre-Citizens United, when all the Republicans had to start pretending it never existed just to please their benefactors at Koch Industries and elsewhere.
There's a good question about whether his flip-flop on climate change will help him with Latino voters. He's seeking Latino voters because he is of Cuban descent, and recent polls show Latino voters strongly favor government action on climate change. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton preempted Rubio's big announcement by declaring her own candidacy for the Democratic presidential nomination the day before. Unlike Senator Rubio, Secretary Clinton is not a climate science denier. Here she is at a speech at the National Clean Energy Summit last fall.
You shouldn't have to say the obvious, that the data is unforgiving, no matter what the deniers try to assert. The threat is real, but so is the opportunity. Because if we come together to make the hard choices, America can be the clean energy superpower for the 21st century.
Wow, it's just night and day. I'm no great supporter of Hillary Clinton's, but hearing her talk about that just underscores the difference between her and, well, all of the Republicans that have jumped in the race so far. She is an adult. They are not.
And remember, world governments are meeting this coming December to hammer out a final international climate treaty. The next U.S. president will decide whether the U.S. leads on climate change or doesn't.
Can't decide. Do I want her or do I want this guy?
Our government can't control the weather.
Good news. The world's largest coal consumer is now using less coal. The Guardian reports that thanks to stringent new anti-pollution regulations, China's imports of coal have fallen more than 40% over the same period last year.
40%?
40%. That's good for Chinese citizens and the planet, but bad news for Australia's conservative Prime Minister Tony Abbott, a climate change denier who is banking heavily on China buying Australia's coal. Finally, remember how Florida was recently exposed for having an unwritten ban on state employees using the words global warming and climate change?
I do. And though tragic, It was also kind of hysterical.
Yeah, well, now it seems to have spread to Wisconsin, where the Republican majority on the state's Board of Commissioners of Public Lands has voted to ban employees that manage public lands from working on or even answering emails asking questions about climate change impacts on Wisconsin's public resources.
It's an amazing story. This one woman who they're targeting on this commission had participated in a global warming study some years ago at the request of the previous governor of Wisconsin.
Yep.
And now they're trying to throw her off this committee.
By any means possible, apparently.
That same woman also happens to be the daughter of the Wisconsin senator who founded Earth Day back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Amazing. For much more on that story and the others we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Eleven minutes past 7 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And I'm proud to announce that we have never had a listener tune in from Abu Dhabi before, but we have now. Good morning. It is 12 minutes past 3 a.m., I think, if I'm doing this right, there. And good morning, Ron. Glad you made it safely over. Probably getting used to the time change and everything, and that's why he's still awake and all. But thanks to Ron for kicking in and taking us down to $190 to go to finish off fundraising for the week and give us a fighting chance at knocking out all the mid month bills. Thank you very, very kindly. Ron jumped in with Catherine who kicked in $100 a little bit ago. Thank you very, very much. Note coming from Robert in Australia, and I think this is quite the valid observation. Robert in Australia says, "I have to admit, feeling ill knowing a man was being deliberately put to death while listening to that song." Australia ended the death penalty in 1968, 47 years ago, and of course, There, in this instance, there is no question as to guilt of the instant of the actual offense. But how is it that Geraldo Rivera can argue that a police officer gunning down, shooting 8 times at a fleeing black man and hitting him 4 times in the back, at distance, not close up, that's heat of passion murder, but this one wasn't. And of course, again, all white jury, mental problems, black man, and we just presume that the all white jury got it right. Because see, that all white jury never did. You don't even get anything approaching a double blind on this. Is there an instance where an all-black jury gave a white murderer a pass or sent a white murderer to the death house? No. Or where that all-white jury sent a white murderer to the death house? No. Because a jury hears a case, and then another jury hears another case. And then there's the fact that it was by lethal injection. And we know now from various and sundry accounts, especially coming from the state of Oklahoma Stan, their capital there being Oklahomabad, we know that horrible, horrible things attend a death by so-called lethal injection, or as I like to call it, and you'll understand why if you ever see the picture of the thing that they use to kill the person in the name of the state or the country. It's a horizontal crucifixion. you know, arms all splayed out, legs pointed one way, head going the other. It's a crucifix. I mean, it was crucifixion when, legend has it that Peter was crucified upside down, I think, or on an X or something, because he said he didn't deserve to be crucified in the same way as his Lord. But they still called it crucifixion. It's kind of like lynching. There is no absolutely carved in stone methodology for lynching. Yes, there can be a hanging from a tree or a lamppost, but it can also be a matter of shooting or torturing. And this is another one of those moments where the Constitution comes into play, because even last minute petitions for stays of execution are judged against the constitutional standard of cruel and unusual. Not cruel or unusual, cruel and unusual. And again, if you use the that bloodthirsty religious zealot Fat Tony Scalia, or the bloodthirsty religious zealot Slappy Thomas, or the bloodthirsty religious zealot Sammy Bad Breath Alito, or the bloodthirsty religious zealot John Roberts, or the bloodthirsty religious zealot Anthony Kennedy, if you use the originalism doctrine, then you have to say, does strapping a person down on a horizontal crucifix and pumping strange chemicals into his arm until he dies, is that both cruel and unusual? And if you're judging it by the standards of, say, 1787, then, hey, look, the whole pumping into the veins part is definitely unusual by the standards of the original framers of the Constitution, because they didn't understand that. I mean, arguably, George Washington did not die of natural causes. He died of being bled to death. Because if you got sick, the physician, who might also have been your barber, would come over and look at you and say, well, his color's not real good. I think we need to bleed him a little bit. And they would open a vein into a bowl. Because freedom. The greatest country in the world on earth. Because the practice of medicine was, under the most generous of considerations, barbaric. So, hey, we get to check off the unusual box. But then we have to crawl around inside the framers' skulls a little bit and think about all the different ways that people were executed way back then. Strapped him down, pumped his veins full of strange chemicals. Definitely unusual. But you know what? If they wanted to, the people of Missouri could have strapped his arms and legs to four separate draft animals and had them all pull in different directions at the same time, yanking him into quarters, and then cut his belly open and shown him his own entrails while setting fire to them. Because that happened. So, we're sorry, sir. It may be unusual to the framers of the Constitution, but compared to being ripped into pieces by draft animals, it ain't cruel. Too bad for you. You die. And if that doesn't give you right then, right there, all the way down to the ground, a compelling argument against the absolute, utter, unmitigated stupidity of using constitutional originalism, nothing ever will. Jack in Shreveport pointing out by email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Anyone who's been through the system or has a clue about how the justice system works is removed from the jury, by the way. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you want to get off a jury? It's easy. It's easy to make sure that you never sit in judgment of anyone. All you have to do is walk in and say something absolute. Like, I think all defendants are probably guilty because the police only charged the guilty ones. Boom, you're off the jury. Or you can walk in and say, all cops lie. I wouldn't believe one if he said the sky was blue. Off the jury. Can you be impartial? Absolutely not. Off the jury. Do you know anything at all about the law? I know Shakespeare said the law is an ass. Ain't off the jury. So the odds, the term is jury of your peers. How were those 12 white people even remotely the peers of the defendant in Missouri? And again, I'm not excusing his horrible conduct. But we have standards that we don't even remotely attempt to fulfill. Now, I mean, you want to talk about cruel in this country, the way we feel about the trans community. Now, if they had made him put on a dress and sing "I'm so pretty" while they horizontally crucified him, by God, that would be cruel. There's plenty of potential for cruel out there. Let's run down to, and by the way, the phone numbers, if you want to jump into the conversation. The Herald line, 304-574-8178. Maud, the Gizmo line, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. No, there's plenty of opportunities here in the greatest country in the world on earth for cruel. I was reminded when I saw this story, I was reminded of the fact, not because there's any relation between the two individuals, but because it's Louisianistan. But primarily because, well, our buddy Jim in Louisianistan is getting the hell out of Louisianistan, and stories like this make me not question that in the least. ABC News has the story of a trans man who was working in New Orleans at some sort of a money house, a joint called Tower Loan. The individual's name is Tristan Broussard, and he is suing Tower Loan. Tristan Broussard is a trans man, a female-to-male transsexual. Kristen Broussard has done everything necessary to live the life that he feels he actually is. Lives as a man, acts as a man, works as a man. Tower Loan hired Tristan Broussard as a manager trainee. And they were apparently impressed enough to bring him on. I mean, manager trainee, you know? And I've never heard of the company before, but Tower Loan is a privately owned finance company. They've got 180 different branches in five states. That includes Louisiana. There are more than 700 employees. They serve more than 200,000 customers. And as soon as they, because, see, in the second decade of the 21st century in Merca, I don't have to turn the reverb on again, do I? You can't get a job unless your papers are in order. And Tristan Broussard's papers were not in order. Because Tristan Broussard's driver's license said Tristan Broussard was a female. And Tower Loan dropped Tristan Broussard like a hot rock. Well, not really. First, they gave Tristan Broussard an ultimatum. They said that, the supervisor called Tristan into the back room and said, sign this. You know, nothing ever good happens when you get called into the back office and there's a piece of paper waiting for you and it's and somebody's standing there and says, sign this, yeah. And the paper put before Tristan Broussard was one which said that Tristan Broussard had a, quote, preference to act and dress as male. And then went on to say that acting and dressing as male was not in compliance with Tower Loan's personnel policies. That is when Tower Loan dropped Tristan Broussard like a hot rock. I still don't fully understand this country's hang up with gender. I happen to be looking at a photograph of Tristan Broussard here, and well, if you walked past him on the street, you wouldn't think twice. Even if you were inclined to think about what somebody's gender is. I don't. Is that there a man or a woman? But they canned him. He's suing. I hope he, it seems to kind of fit here. I hope he sues the pants off of Tower Loan. You want somebody to wear a skirt? Let them. Because he got their pants. He sued them off of them. On the other hand, here's some more fun. They said, now, Tristan, we can rehire you just as quick as you get done having your sexy time surgery. This is a company vice president. Maybe if you had some surgery, we'd see some results and we'd consider hiring you back. Tristan Broussard's been on testosterone for over a year. Better beard than I do. the EEOC suit is currently pending in Louisiana federal court. I hope he wins it. Here, you want a funny comparison? Or if nothing else, a strangely ironic comparison. Tristan Broussard is going to have a harder time proving his case as a trans man than the dumbass coal miner did in northern West Virginia, who got a whole bunch of back pay against a coal company. Remember when Devin told us about this? Because he said he couldn't participate in that laser scanner of his hand because it might be the mark of the beast, and it was violating his First Amendment religious liberty. Remember that? Yeah. He won. On the other hand, does a trans man have any protection as a class, a protected class in Merca? I don't know the answer to that question. I'm guessing no. Because, in point of fact, when the EEOC, the Equal Opportunity Opportunity Commission, investigated, Tower Loan responded with the argument that they were not preventing them from firing Tristan Broussard because federal anti-discrimination laws don't protect no transgenders working peoples. Why should they be protected? I mean, if they find out, if people in Louisiana stand was to find out we had a trans feller working at Tire Loan as a management trainee, well, hell, a good upstanding God-fearing Bible-believing Christian people probably be picketing outside, except for the Baptist ministers what might be trying to get a date. Mean-ass country. Mean. Mean. Let's run over to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
What's happening, Bill?
Bob, you were throwing me so much ammunition, I can't figure out what war I'm fighting in here.
Feed me, Mandrake. Feed me.
Yeah, well, let's start with the police incidents. I remember getting pulled over for having a license plate light that was out. And I had a young friend of mine with me who was a long-haired musician, and the police had to make some remark about if this was my boyfriend.
Nice.
Or my lover. And then my first response was, why don't you go ask your wife? What? I'm not completely stupid, Bob.
I was going to say, did you really?
No, I would have ended up in the slammer. Another time a guy gets me for an illegal write on red and laying in a paper bag on the floor was a 38 and a bag of reefer. Oh, so much for that. Because I was living in a neighborhood where at night I didn't travel without a weapon because it was just the way it was. It was a bunch of poor people and bunch of people who were addicted to crack or something or other, and if they had to rob me to get it, they'd get it. And, you know, I had plenty of black friends that felt the same way I did, so it wasn't a racist thing. It was just, well, where are you at this time of the day or night? And, you know, I'm traveling late at night after a gig, anything. I mean, everything's liable to happen. You get into, I don't know how much time, I don't think you spend much time in saloons anymore after 10 o'clock at night, do you, Bob?
No.
No.
Well, frankly, but there to be fair, there aren't a hell of a lot of saloons to spend any time in after 10 o'clock around here.
Yeah.
There's precisely zero within 10 miles of me.
Good for you. What's everybody do? Drinking at home? I'm working to buy some vodka, in fact, myself. I have a taste for the old Bloody Mary, you know.
Booze porn moment. If you've got a hankering for Bloody Marys, I cannot recommend highly enough the Bloody Mary mix that goes by the name of Zing Zang.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How does it spell?
Z-I-N-G-Z-A-N-G.
Zing Zang, huh?
Zing Zang. And
all I used to do was mix tomato juice and a shot of vodka with all it took for me, you know.
This is the best Bloody Mary mix I've ever. There's Snappy Tom and Mr. and Mrs. T and all of that stuff, but I like spicy and this stuff packs a spicy wallop, Bill. It's kind of thickish, but I mean you can taste the Worcestershire in it, you can taste the horseradish in it, you can taste the celery in it, you can taste the hot pepper in it, but for me it's a little thick. So even in making a Bloody Mary, I'll even thin it. I'll add a little tomato juice to it. But you want to talk about a quick and easy and have all that flavor wallop, that's the stuff. And it works great with tequila, too. I like my Bloody Marys with tequila. Not a vodka guy.
Well, when these guys moved me, they lost my shot glass somewhere. That would have been easy if I was still playing in bars. How long would it take me to get a shot glass, you know? But I don't even know where they sell the damn things anymore.
You know what? That's so true. It was a while back, but I had I have what we call down here hankerings, and every now and I had a hankering for just a little brandy. I think that was back during the brutal part of the cold weather winter, and taking a cue from my friends in Wisconsin, that state being the national leader in brandy consumption. I thought, well, I'll just get a little brandy. But then I thought, well, hey, it'd be nice to have a snifter and not just sit there, drinking straight out of the screw top bottle like the boys under the bridge. And I went, that's the world we live in now. If Walmart doesn't carry it, you don't need it.
Yeah.
No snifter.
Well, Walmart has replaced so many stores. Go in and price. Something that used to be pretty cheap, men's underwear, go in and price it now at these Walmart and such. They're certainly not giving anything away. That's for sure. Their prices have skyrocketed. Or, if you're looking for a quality item, I'd like to get my electric razor. I can't buy cutters for it anymore. It was a $100 razor 25 years ago.
Can't get it on.
Can't
get it online.
Nah, I can't work online real well because of the vision.
Oh, that's true.
I hate posting credit cards, Bob.
Understood.
That's something. You leave yourself wide open when you put a credit card number on anything that they can sell. It's amazing how they can break into your stuff. I'm not telling you anything.
Oh, no.
I don't know. Did you get hacked much?
No.
Yeah. Well, I know our family member. I had talked to him because I expected, I was hoping he would pass by here sometime this summer, but I don't think he'll make it this year. Because I just love it when I know three members of the group personally that I've seen in my area, and the one man, old Jug himself, I think, he's been really helpful with the computer. He's a great guy. But I have to take time right now and say thank you to Miss Baker. She does know what root beer is supposed to taste like, that's for darn sure.
Oh, really? Well, you are the second endorser of Mug Up Root Beer. Because I know our buddy Reinhard loved it, too.
Oh, it's good. By the way, is Scott from Sweden, is he Swedish himself? Or is
No, he's an expat. He's an Ohio boy.
Yeah.
Diddy's
did his graduate work in college in Kansas. Met a lovely Swedish woman who then said, love me, love my country, and away they went. I think I've got the story right.
From what I remember, Swedish women can be very lovely.
I have been told.
All women can be lovely depending on how well you get along with them and how well they get along with you. Because my second wife would not have won any prizes. My first one was extremely good-looking girl. But that's another story, you know. It's the old story. But, I wanted to thank Carol because that was such good stuff. And I was saying there's so many people. I'd like to get these computers finished up, but right now I just finished that book on Stillwell. Bob, there is so much of the story of just China before that era was still one of the dynasties, you know, which was, it wasn't the Ming dynasty, what the hell was it? But they went from that and, you know, and Dr. Sun Yat-sen, and then, of course, the Chiang Kai-shek. And that guy, Bob, he milked this country, but we wanted him to stay in that war against Japan because the Japanese were just as foolish. They kept a million men sitting there in China, the Japanese did. And that's a lot of people who could have been killing the, you know, Americans, and to some degree the British fought a little bit in Burma, and the Australians, oh my God. You ever see a map of New Guinea?
Yes.
The Owen Stanley Mountains? The Japanese were climbing from one side and the Australians from the other side, and my God, what a disaster, you know, outright disaster. That's one thing about history. It just, Bob, it's like a broken record. It just keeps repeating itself. Like this fear of communism from the beginning. I can understand why nobody cared for Joseph Stalin, can you?
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, but just the idea of a different economic system when it's being handled decently. Gorbachev was not a bad... I don't think Gorbachev lined him up and shot him, did he?
No, but he was presiding over a vastly different Soviet Union, and by then, of course, Stalin had been utterly discredited. That's the problem with autocracies. Like I've said before, I don't think any country has ever actually successfully tried communism, because they wind up mired in autocracy, and it ain't the same thing.
But getting back to your original discourse tonight, I've seen this police situation go from things to, like they had to read you your rights, you know. Now they can read them to you in six different languages, but they're denying them to you anyhow.
Yeah, you can be denied your rights in any language on earth.
Yep. Oh yeah, it's not just here. This idea of the greatest country in the world. I think when they wrote the Constitution and the Declaration, I think that's what they had in mind. But when you start throwing money into the mess, you know. By the way, is the professor out of town for some reason?
Yeah, he is. He did a program yesterday, and then he announced it a couple of times. But he's up in Connecticut. His lovely wife's son is getting ready to deploy and may not be heard from for 6 months to a year, so they're going up to get together and, you know, family time stuff.
Yeah, it's just the whole idea of this. The one thing I liked about the draft, and this shows up in Vietnam, is when the men who were drafted started coming back and talking, they talked plenty. I had a friend whose husband died of Agent Orange poisoning, and I guess it's just the time I was at a certain age, all this, you ducking left and right from the fan, you know, the excrement from the fan. And I think you guys are getting a dose of it now that's just as every bit as bad, you know. It's because we're going backwards. The next thing is look out for the chain gang, Bob.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because we know where that was. In a way, putting guys to work doing something to help society, that's one thing, but the chain gang, all it did was take work away from you know, free labor, and the men became slaves on the chain gang. And it went clear the line for somebody else, but yeah, you hit it right on the nose, this police stuff that we're hearing more and more about. A lot of it's thought that had been put an end to, you know, but nah. It's just the same as it always was. In fact, I think that DUI is not a good thing. Driving when you're drunk is a terrible thing. But right now, I see that as a real income source for the states, or for anybody who can get their hands. Oh, lawyers? I have that cynical line, right, that marriage between the same-sex marriage, the lawyers can't wait for the additional business, because then you have to, if you're breaking up, don't you have to get a legal divorce?
Absolutely.
And so here's the can. Watch that lawyer stick his hand in there and grab money from everybody. Well, if so, it's equal opportunity robbery in that case, I guess, you know.
Exactly.
Because I am cynical. I think that marriages of any kind, between human beings, any kind of relationships can be tremendously good, and man, they can go bad too, you know. There's no guarantee just because you're the same gender as somebody you're going to get along with them forever. The stresses of budgeting and trying to survive economically just leaves a heavy push on everybody, you know. Right now, I'm not going to tell you anything about money because you know the bad situation, the bad parts, any better than I do right now. I just don't eat as much as I used to, you know. Don't have to. God knows I've done it enough. Anyway, stay out of trouble.
I will, and I'm frankly surprised that this being the 14th of April, given the nature of our frequent conversations, Bill, that you haven't noted the anniversary.
No, what's it today?
150 years ago this evening. About now, as a matter of fact, I think. Mr. Lincoln had been convinced to go to the theater because he was bad jokes aside, Lincoln loved the theater, and he loved Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And so they went to see Our American Cousin.
Yep. And Grant was supposed to go. He asked Grant to go with him, and Ulysses wanted to get to Philadelphia, I guess, where his kids might have been.
I've read a couple of places that the reason Grant didn't go with, and I think this may be speculative, but the reason that Grant did not go with the Lincolns was because Mrs. Grant, do I have this right? Mrs. Grant absolutely could not get along with Mrs. Lincoln because almost no one could get along with Mrs. Lincoln.
Yeah, Julia Dent Grant was his wife, and Mrs. Lincoln, was she half a bubble off? What's the consensus?
You know, I think by modern standards, Bill, it's almost inescapable that Mrs. Lincoln was mentally ill. But the thing that would have, and remember, the the president had only been re-inaugurated for a very short period of time in his into his second
yep.
term.
Yep.
And that being the case, if you read some of the biographical stuff, Mrs. Lincoln had spent horse gagging loads of money redecorating yep. the White House. And there were arguments to be made that there should have been a little, probably, what we would term in the modern era, improper influence peddling. I mean, it was gowns, and it was, you know, knew this and knew that. And, you know, as we think about the political climate that exists today, the opposition would have savaged her. And in point of fact, I can't help but wonder if, given what the Republicans have been willing to impeach over in the modern era, and understanding that philosophically the Democrats of yesteryear are the Republicans of today and the Republicans of yesteryear are the Democrats of today, I don't think it's unreasonable to wonder if, had he survived, there might not have been some real problems arise out of Mrs. Lincoln's conduct. But the other, but of course, you know, the most of the speculation that takes place around this date has to do with, had he lived, what would Reconstruction have been like? I don't think, I've frequently made the argument, Bill, that old Marse Bobby Lee probably should have done the Spandau Ballet at the end of some Twisted Sisal, but even if he had not. And I think if Lincoln had survived, they would not have. But the big thing is that Reconstruction would have probably proceeded along entirely different lines from the half-hearted and ultimately abandoned method in which it was.
Well, there was a lot of financial chicanery going on, too. The so-called carpetbaggers and the scallywags. It's the way things can go in any society. If there's a way to make a buck, somebody will find it. And they don't really care how honest it may be. It's just turn the dollar, no matter what. I mean, that seems to be the way it is when you have this type of money-oriented society. But you're right. I often have wondered what it would have been like had Lincoln lived with malice towards none and charity toward all. Was that the second inaugural address?
I do believe so, yeah.
Because that's the way, both of those, you know, both he and Jefferson Davis were both born in Kentucky.
A matter of not too many miles apart, as a matter of fact, yeah.
Yep.
But,
so you wonder
by the same token, Lincoln was also fond of the let's ship them all back to Africa approach.
Yes.
And had said as much. And it took Frederick Douglass to sort of turn the light on for him. It was Frederick Douglass who said to him, you know, I got nowhere to go back to. I'm an American.
Absolutely.
And so we know that there was a move afoot in the Republicans, among the Republicans, the hardcore abolitionist Republicans in Congress. Some of them wanted to dispossess the planter class and send them packing, which probably would have been the best thing that could have happened to the South. But none of that happens. You get the Andrew Johnson presidency, which was a disaster, the first impeachment, and pretty soon the South begins to piss and moan, and what you get out of that is an abandonment of Reconstruction and the rise of Jim Crow.
Yep. Well, Andrew Johnson was East Tennessean, was he not?
Yep.
And he was
brought onto the ticket for 1864 specifically because of his East Tennessee connections, because East Tennessee had been even though Tennessee had seceded, East Tennessee had a lot of people who were opposed to the committing of treason.
Yep, and they were not the planter class, Bob, because
no.
What can you plant in the mountains of East Tennessee?
No, those are the generational descendants of the same bunch of hillbillies who marched over the mountain and whipped the ass of the British at Kings Mountain.
Yep.
Got liquored up and started marching, and I mean whipped ass. But you know, that's another part of the story of the South. The South was not nearly as solid as it was portrayed to be. There was, for instance, a union unit that was raised in North Alabama that eventually became a cavalry unit.
Yes, sir.
I think it was the third Alabama yep. Union Cavalry.
Well, and Pemberton, who surrendered Vicksburg to Grant, he was a northern man who had married a southern woman, and Jefferson Davis seemed to like him a lot.
And bet on the wrong damn horse.
You bet it. I didn't believe it. I'll let you go because there's other people, but... you take care and take care of yourself, and thank you, sir.
All right, you have a good evening, Bill. Take care.
Good night.
Hey, good luck with those Bloody Marys. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, the legendary bluesman of Cleveland. And both lines are open. I'm sorry I didn't. We had a caller on the other line. I'm sorry I didn't get to you quite quick enough. But if you want to call back, that's fine. Either line is open. 304-663-4676 or 304-574-8178. And, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn, Skype to Skype. It's about 2 minutes before the hour. I tell you what, we'll take a little break. And in so doing, I'm going to guzzle about a half a bottle of water here and come back to your calls or, for that matter, me filibustering. It's up to you, pretty much entirely. Again, thanks to Catherine, and thanks to Ron for jumping in with fundraising this evening. It is much appreciated, and we're only $190 away from the fundraising goal for the week. Most kind, indeed. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Had the wrong song there for a minute.
Got tomorrow in our
3 minutes past the hour, 57 minutes or so remaining in this evening's Titanic Tuesday program on the Horn. Let's see. Welcome to the chat room, Mad Mike in South Carolina. We've heard from Mad Mike a couple of times. Welcome to the full multimedia interactive experience. Let's see. Where to go? Oh, okay, here's a weird one. Or maybe it's not so weird. Maybe it's just another day in the greatest country in the world on earth. I'm sure our buddy Ron in Raleigh knows more about this story than I do. But, yesterday, the campus of Wayne Community College in North Carolina Stan was put on lockdown, as well as eventually being evacuated, because someone went onto the campus and murdered the college's print shop director, a man by the name of Ron Lane. Lane had just arrived for work on Monday morning. He had been with the Wayne Community College print shop for 18 years. And someone went onto the campus and just blew him away because freedom. Wolverines! Yeah. This is also a good time to note that the National Republican Rifle Association has been busily holding its clavern in Nash Vegas this year. I'm sure they've been having a high old time there on the banks of the Cumberland River. They've had some interesting discussions. Sunday. An author by the name of Steve Tarani, I'm thinking instead of author we should probably call him certifiable paranoiac, he gave a presentation at the NRA Clavern in which he declared the following, and he's talking about Merca. The street signs suddenly went from English to Arabic. I've never seen a street sign do that, have you? Or English to French, for that matter, or even English to Spanish. I mean, sometimes there are signs in English, sometimes they're in Spanish, right. But the signs themselves, the street signs suddenly went from English to Arabic. There wasn't a single English word on any shop or any street sign. And in fact, these little yellow signs were posted all along the edges. Of edges of what? Jeremy said to me, "This is it. We don't go past this line." And I said to Jeremy, "What do you mean? You guys are Detroit Metro. You're the SWAT team. You can go anywhere you want. What if you get a call over there?" He said, "This is it. It's hazardous for our team if we go past this line. I have seen it with my own eyes, witnessed it in the back seat of a car, and it is for real. No-go zones exist in the United States. Dearborn, Michigan is not the only place that these settlements exist." Settlements? What are they? They're in Michigan fighting Tecumseh or something? They're spread out over the country in various cities. There's an estimate of over 5,000 known terrorist cells in the United States. However, our most persistent and significant threat right now to us here today, this morning, is the homegrown violent extremists. Does that line bother you at all? I've witnessed it in the back seat of a car. My guess is if he was in the back seat of a car, the only no-go zone he saw was his wife. Hey, no-go zones in Merkel. And, of course, talking to all the paranoid, flipped-out, halfway already mentally destabilized members of the National Republican Rifle Association, they were probably fairly bouncing on their folding chairs. This was all an hour-long seminar about the threats that average, everyday Americans face every day on average. This paranoid goober went on about how our porous borders are why we have these terror cells and all the extremists. It's possible that at least 20% of what comes over that border, that's a big number, guys, is Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Ethiopian Al-Shabaab, known gang members and supporters of the cartel. This guy actually said that, Sharia law rules in Dearborn, Michigan. And you know what? I wish the liberal media would stop saying things like Dearborn isn't run by the Sharias. After all, if Dearborn wasn't run by Sharia law, would they have a mayor named Jack O'Reilly? I forget. Oh, it was Birmingham, England. Who was it? Bill O'Reilly, not Jack, Bill, it said was a no-go Sharia zone. Of course, when Bill O'Reilly says something, you can dismiss it because he's lying. That's what he does. But I don't know how many people got up all hungover to hold hands and pray on Sunday morning in Nash, Vegas. I'm looking at a picture of guys holding hands and praying in Las Vegas, and I swear to Jesus, one of them has his foot in a bucket. Oh, sorry, Steve. Steve in New York pointing out, no, Bob. It's Osharia law. But if let's say you're doing your practicum or your clinicals or whatever in psychology, you could have gone to the NRA meeting in Nash Vegas there and gone you could have come back. You probably wouldn't even had to have done any PhD work. Then there was Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, who talked to the Clavern on Saturday. Sandy Hook is just the beginning. We're raising a generation of mass killers. Nice of him to admit it. No, he was trying to make sure that he instilled appropriate fear in the... I'm looking at a picture here. I can't find anybody with skin darker than a pink Victoria's Secret bag. Sandy Hook is just the beginning. We're raising a generation of mass killers. Can we take the lessons learned in Columbine and Jonesboro and Virginia Tech? Can we take the lessons learned on 9/11 and Sandy Hook Elementary School? Or do we have to wait until our kids die? Any politician who tells you we can solve this problem with gun laws is an idiot. The politicians drag a red herring across the path. Well, then it gets all gritty. Who wants to eat gritty herring? I like my herring creamed with pickled onions. It's all about the evil guns, and if we make the evil guns go away, the bad men will go away. Lies. Idiots. He took 2 hours to talk about what we need more good guys with guns. We need them in our schools. We need them reaching for their tasers and instead getting their good guns and blowing away an unconvicted crime suspect. We need good guys with guns to chase down the Walter Scotts of the world. All of our citizens have to get guns. Folks, we have raised a vicious, vicious generation of children. They've given us crimes on children like nothing in human history. Sandy Hook is just the beginning. Our founding fathers knew there would be days like this, and they created the Second Amendment for just a time like this. And he's right. He's right. They did know there would be times like this, and they did create the Second Amendment for just such reasons, because they knew sometimes black people would run away from white people, and you have to have guns if you want to shoot them in the back. And in the midst of all that, the politicians want to disarm our citizens. That is flat-out treason. Thorazine dart for Sergeant Grossman. Thorazine dart for Sergeant Grossman. Now, this is a guy who has actually taught psychology at West Point. Not kidding. And he claims to be the founder of a new academics. And he calls his academics killology. He likes to study people getting killed in war. And he likes to study the violent crime that is raging the world. But I think he has a point. He didn't mean to, but he has a point. We have raised a vicious, vicious generation of children. Not a whole generation, just the ones that are raised on the kind of paranoia that Sergeant Grossman peddles at Clavern meetings like this. Mother Lanza certainly raised a vicious son. What does one say about Mother Slager? Or Mother Zimmerman? Mother Wilson. So, all of that is just an aside. That was not the original story that I was looking at. It didn't take long for law enforcement authorities in North Carolina to figure out who they were looking for. We're looking for Kenneth Morgan Stansel III. Uh-huh. 20 years old. He was angry because he had been let go at the print shop at Wayne Community College. Although police gave no motive, his mama, raising a generation of vicious children. Stansel's mama said that he was angry after being dismissed from his job at the school last month. Mother Stansel said she didn't know what had set her boy off yesterday. Kenneth Morgan Stansel III took it on the lam after murdering, allegedly, Ron Lane. And he got picked up in Florida. It is apparently a crime in Daytona Beach, Florida, to sleep on the beach. So when the Daytona Beach cops saw somebody sleeping on the beach and roused him and ID'd him and found that he was carrying a knife and got his name from him, yeah, ID, yeah. Well, they arrested him, and he's sitting in jail now in Volusia County, waiting for extradition papers to be filed to bring him back to North Carolina to face charges relating to the murder of Ron Lane. Not a lot of background here, but a little bit, enough to make the story interesting, beyond the fact that it's already a horror. Because, you see, Kenneth Morgan Stansel III is an Eagle Scout. Mm-hmm. An Eagle Scout. And, of course, I'm sure he has had a steady dose of how the Second Amendment prevents the government from jackbooting its tyranny down upon our white necks. Because here's the other fun part. Kenneth Morgan Stansel III appears to have gray eyes. Do I need to mention the fact that he's white? Because he is. And for a 20-year-old former Eagle Scout, I gotta say that it's a little odd. Now, it's not odd that he's got a reddish brown beard or a thinly trimmed little mustache. Or that he appears to have shaved his head. You know where we're going. I got to the shaven head part, and you knew right where we were going, didn't you? Mm-hmm. In a photo that was taken today by the Volusia County Corrections Department, Kenneth Morgan Stansel III displays his face with his chin a little bit up. His head apparently shaved. And while you can't see the top of his head, apparently it's tattooed. And Ferg knows these cultural things better than I do. Ferg looked at his picture and said, "Well, he's got a Tyson." I said, "What?" He said, "That weird geometric tattoo all over the left side of his face, around his eye and down his cheek, that's a Tyson." I said, "Could have fooled me." But he does. It's all pointy shapes and angles, and it goes from the middle of his brow up over his left eyebrow, comes down the side by his left eyebrow, and fans out, and then there's a little circle. And I only mention this because it's the 14th day of April, and hell, we're only 6 days away from April the 20th. And I can't tell if this is actually tatted on or if this is some work he did with a Sharpie. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe they screwed up down at the Volusia County Corrections Department and put out and misidentified Kenneth Morgan Stansel III. Maybe this isn't Kenneth Morgan Stansel III, former Eagle Scout, who, inside an open circle of pale skin, inside his tattoo, has the numbers 8-8 also tattooed in. 88. What did Sergeant Grossman say? Sergeant Grossman, please report to the basement of the Trotsky Building. Paging Sergeant Grossman. Sergeant Grossman said, we've raised a generation of vicious children. Now, for people who follow this sort of thing, that number, 88, well, I looked at it and went, ding! 88 is a special number to the Aryan Nation skinhead neo-Nazi types. Because if you count the letters in the alphabet, let's do it together. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, G, A, B, C, D, E, H. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, 8. 8, 8, H, H. In neo-Nazi skinhead Aryan nations, neo-Nazi circles, that's a little kind of high sign. 88HH, Heil Hitler. Who had 825? Apparently, somewhere along the way, I mean, we don't know if it was while he was learning to be an Eagle Scout, or afterward, young Kenneth Morgan Stansel III, if this really is him in the photograph, decided to get in touch with his inner whiteness. 88. They're going to love him in prison. If he goes. If he goes. Merca. Not touching the reverb. Merca. It's that time of year. I don't understand. Oh, yeah, I do. I was going to say I don't understand white folks' fascination with that man. But he is a symbol for their... He is an avatar for their racism, their bigotry, and their hatred. Yeah. I wonder if that's part of the generation of vicious children. Sergeant Jack D. Ripper Grossman was talking about. You see, I don't think when Kenneth Morgan Stansel III allegedly killed Ron Lane, they said he did it with quote some kind of long gun. You reckon having a Freedom Protector pistol
would have saved Mr. Lane? Because I don't think so. There are seldom any instances at all in which having your Freedom Protector pistol is going to save you from somebody who means to kill you with their Freedom Protector, because they've got the drop on you. But that, well, that's not going to wash with the boys holding hands and praying over at the Clavern meeting in Las Vegas, which I presume has wrapped up by now. We're about 30 minutes away from the end of this evening's Titanic Tuesday program. Couple of different directions we can go. Just a little warning to our buddy Jim in Louisiana, Stan, that all is not well in Colorado. Story coming from KMGH TV of three food truck operators in Denver. About 8:30 on Friday, and food trucks are fun. There's some really cool stuff to be had. And in the case of Denver, some food trucks had set up nearby the stadium where the Colorado Rockies play baseball on 8:30 Friday. After the home opener there for the Rockies, three guys, went to one of the food trucks and a man named Terrence Gibbons was operating a barbecue truck. I would probably gravitate to something like that. I'm a barbecue fool. And these three drunk guys wander up to the truck, and as Terrence Gibbons put it, he pretty much singled me out for being black by using a word we're all familiar with. He kept using the N-word. He kept saying that I didn't really know what it was like to be black. And so, because the three guys were drunk and obnoxious, Gibbons refused to serve them. That's when the three drunk guys punched one of Gibbons' friends in the face. Gibbons was jumped from behind and had his head slammed into a car window. It shattered the glass and rendered him unconscious. They did, Gibbons and his buddy, got a couple of pictures of the assholes in question. White guys. Gibbons' friend Carl Umland said, I told him he wasn't going to get away with it. He was like, dude, I'm totally getting away with this. My whole family's rich. We're wealthy, and my dad's an attorney. I guess he didn't need to add, and I'm white. Now, this was Friday. The photographs have gone viral. And as of the publication of this story over at Raw Story, Travis Geddes reports, no arrests have been made, but police say they have strong leads in the case, which is being investigated as a possible hate crime. It's possible. Three drunk dudes holler racial slurs, and it's a possible hate crime. But see, that's the thing. It's just three rowdy, drunk baseball white guys, baseball fan white guys, and it may not be a hate crime. It may just be a drunk crime. Because, see, everybody knows when you're drunk, that cancels out your hate. It just asked Mel Gibson. It's the Jews! Right? See, this is why we've got to have the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Because, see, those three white guys may have had very closely held religious beliefs that said that they need, in which their God said that they needed to berate people for the color of their skin after they had sacramentally gotten loaded. Jack in Shreveport with an email asking, but does our guy, Kenny Morgan Stansel III, realize he copied the tattoo off a black man? Is that goddess of irony at work, maybe? We use the, we sometimes use the cowbell as a way of invoking the goddess, or placating her at the very least. Possibly, possibly. Hey, you want to get in on the tail end of the conversation this evening? There's about 20 more minutes to do it in. 304-663-4676 or 304-574-8178. Bob Kincaid Horn, Skype to Skype. It all works equally well. Well, okay, since we did that, let's do this. A little bit of dust on this story, but not so much as to make it invalid. Going back over to Ferguson, Missouri. The court clerk in what has been identified as a wildly vicious and oppressive municipal court system got herself in hot water because, as seems to be the case with ever so many right-wingers, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, boogers, boog-readers, baggers, birchers, any Republicans, you know, they like to circulate racist emails. Washington Post did some digging around after it was revealed that staff in the court system there had a predilection for sending racist emails. Well, we found out what the emails were. Remember, these are people who work in a department that is supposedly dedicated to the administration of a word that in Ferguson was laughingly referred to as justice. The court clerk and two former supervisors in the police department sent emails. One of them was an email that was titled Very Rare Photo. It was sent on April 19th, 2011. By Mary Ann Twitty. She sent them and she received them. Rick Henke and former Captain Sergeant William Mudd participated as well. Ms. Twitty forwarded a message, the one that's a very rare photo. It's a picture from his, back in his B-movie days of Ronnie Reagan giving a bottle to a chimpanzee, Bonzo. Bonzo constantly upstaged and out-acted Ronnie. But underneath the photo it says, rare photo of Ronald Reagan babysitting Barack Obama in early 1962. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, I don't care who you are. That's funny. No, it's not. And then Ms. Twitty sent both policers an email on March the 1st, 2010, and it was called Leroy's Last Child Support Payment. Today be my baby girl 18th birthday. I be so glad that this be my last child support payment. Month after month, year after year, all those payments. So I call my baby girl Lakeisha to come to my house. And when she get here, I say, baby girl, I want you to take this check to your moss and tell her this be the last check she ever be getting from me, and I want you to come back and tell me the expression on your mama face. So my baby girl take the check over to her mama. I be anxious to hear what she say and about the expression on her face. Baby girl walk through the door, I say, now what yo mama say about that? She say to tell you that you ain't my daddy, and watch the expression on yo face. I probably don't need to mention, but I will anyway, that about an hour and 42 minutes ago, unless a stay was granted, and I'm not aware that it was, the state of Missouri killed, in the name of every citizen in the state of Missouri, a man who fell behind in his child support payments, arguably lost his mind, and committed a murder. He was sentenced to death by a court system in Missouri, not that far different from the court system whose court clerk sent that email. He was convicted and sentenced to death by an all-white jury. And for all we know, somebody on that all-white jury had probably forwarded something like this or received something like this or chuckled at something like this, because this is the racism that infects and is metastasizing all over the greatest country in the world on earth. call sent another one out to a number of people in May 2011. A black woman in New Orleans was admitted into the hospital for pregnancy termination. 2 weeks later, she received a check for $5,000. She phoned the hospital to ask who it was from. The hospital said, Crime Stoppers. June 7th, 2011, Officer Mudd sent the following. Last week I went to sign my dogs up for welfare. At first the lady said dogs are not eligible to draw welfare, so I explained to her that my dogs are mixed in color, unemployed, lazy, can't speak English, and have no friggin' clue who their daddies are. They expect me to feed them, provide them with housing and medical care, so she looked in her policy book to see what it takes to qualify. My dogs get their first checks Friday. Damn, this is a great country. Then going back to November 2008, after the election, from Richard Henke to Redacted. I did not see the email until after blank called me and did not reply because I assumed blank passed on to you that I would work. So instead I replied with something I heard yesterday about President-elect Obama. I really think that some people fail to show the leader of our beloved country the proper respect that is deserving of such an honored position by indicating that we shouldn't worry about him being president very long, because what black man holds a steady job for 4 years? And this guy was on the police force that helped cover for Darren Wilson. So, enter Marianne Twitty. Channel News 4 KMOV asked her if she thought that her emails were racist.
Ignited Ferguson, where three new faces are guaranteed in the city.
And tonight, a central figure in the controversy over the court system and racist emails is breaking her silence. Matt Sesney spoke with Marianne Twitty. Why is she talking now, Matt?
Well, Sharon, Marianne Twitty decided to accept our request for an interview today. It has been 5 weeks since she was fired here in Ferguson over those emails that have shocked so many and, according to her, ruined her life.
It took me a while to get over the feeling of being raped and being thrown under that bus.
That's...
You got that? Yeah. This woman sends out hate-filled racist emails, gets caught by the United States Department of Justice having done it, not doing it. She'd done it long before and got away with it for years. And then says that she was raped. Well, daggummit, I think we finally found the distinction between legitimate and illegitimate rape. God knows the Republicans spent all of 2012 looking for it, but we have finally, in April of 2015, found it.
It took me a while to get over the feeling of being raped.
Because, see, when the whole country finds out that you've been sending nasty-ass racist emails on company time and being paid by the people of the state of Missouri and the city of Ferguson for doing it, you're the victim. It feels just like having someone forcibly subject you to sexual contact. Man! You cannot, I mean, cannot get much more white privilege-y than that. Well, now that she's got one foot in her mouth, let's see if she can work the other one in there with it.
It took me a while to get over the feeling of being raped and being thrown under that bus.
That's how Marianne Twitty feels about the way she lost her job as Ferguson City Court Clerk. She spoke with me inside her North County home, a place she admits she's received death threats. For 19 years, she ran...
She admits she's received death threats. Huh? The place has received death threats? Never mind. She's the victim, okay? Let's be clear. No matter how many people of color got screwed right to the wall inside that racist, bigoted, filthy sham of a judicial system, Marianne Twitty got screwed.
And the court in Ferguson until a month ago when the Justice Department report was critical of how she ran Ferguson's court system, accusing her of boosting revenue by setting fines.
And that's not true. I set no fines. I just abided by them.
But there was more. Those offensive racial emails that Twitty forwarded out to Ferguson officers.
Did you find these emails funny at all?
this is going to be interesting. Remember, she's the victim. And I know that all the right wingers and Republicans and birthers and deathers and ninthers and tenthers and birchers and booger eaters and baggers and libertarians and whatnot want to know what she was wearing. I'm not going to go there because my eyes are bleeding.
Funny as in humor-wise?
Funny as in humor-wise. Wait a minute, huh? You mean funny ha-ha or funny strange? That's where we're going? Okay. Lead on, McDuff, and cursed be he who first cries enough.
Funny as in humor-wise? Humor-wise, yes. Not because it was racist or biased, no.
I mean, it's like I said, I don't care who you are. That's funny. I mean, it's a picture of our greatest American ever, Ronald Reagan, and he's giving a chimpanzee a baby bottle, and it says it's Barack Obama in 1962. I mean, funny humorized? Absolutely. That's a real knee slapper around here in North County. At least in the white parts.
Just funny joke-wise.
Yeah, just funny joke-wise. I mean, we sit down to the Owls Club every now and then. And I mean, and we tell jokes like that, but we also tell jokes about Jews and Polacks and hunkies. Yeah. I mean, these things is just funny. I mean, we don't ever tell no jokes about white people, because I mean. White people just ain't funny. We're just upstanding, godly, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians. Ain't a funny bone in us. That's why we gotta laugh at other people's.
And now, you're kind of...
I feel bad because that's not... I don't want people to look at me and say, well, she sent those racist jokes out because she's racist or bi... And I'm not.
Now, she ain't. It was just funny humor. I mean, it's not like she'd ever open up a restaurant and not serve black people nor nothing. I mean, it's not like she wishes they was using other water fountains or anything. I mean, it's just funny to make jokes about the coloreds. 'Cause, you know, they're funny. I mean, they've been funny ever since we kidnapped them and brought them here. Barrel of laughs. I mean, I watched that Roots program, and dang, I couldn't quit laughing for nothing. That whole scene about what's your name, and he don't really know what his name is. He don't know that his name ain't Kente no more, and it's got to be whipped into him to make him say Toby. I mean, I laugh my white ass off at that.
Twitty says she was simply doing what others in Ferguson government were doing. And
that much I can believe.
She's now paying a heavy price, with her reputation shattered and unemployed.
I don't know. Him nails is looking like he's been recently done. I wonder if she's done fall into the dependency hammock.
Human, I meant nothing bad by it.
No, we don't mean nothing bad. That's the thing. All them oversensitive people out there thinking we mean something by it when we pass around emails that make it seem like the president of the United States was a baby chimpanzee once. You know, they don't mean nothing by that. And making fun about that joke would have been funny about the child support. That joke would have been funny if it had been about, you know, some Italian. I don't know. I missed it. Robert D'Australia just said, did she just say I have black friends? I'd say the odds are about a million in favor that she did. And I mean, that joke about how no black man never keep. I didn't send that one. That was hanky. You better be careful about being all hanky, because you know that can get your adrenaline to pumping and your blood boiling, and then the next thing you know, well. But you'll have to go back to the file for the beginning of the program to get that. Well, time to knock off the program and go shower with bleach, isn't it? But that's okay. We may have come to the end of the program, but there will be more program tomorrow evening because it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and hey, special guest minister. No kidding. A little conversation coming tomorrow evening. We might actually get a little understanding and clarity on what in the world is going on in the hateful minds of right-wing homophobes. Thank you very kindly to Chris and Catherine and Ron, who helped out so magnificently this evening. Thank you very kindly indeed. Thank you to all of you who share your precious, and I do mean precious, finite time in sharing in this ongoing conversation. Thank you to all of you who keep all of this going with your conversation, with your financial support. And for those of you that we hardly ever hear from but just sit there and yell back at the speakers and occasionally send an email or a tweet or a Facebook post, thank you. You're part of what I hope is as precious to you a community as it is to me. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Some of you had asked about the epic Friday on the Front Porch from last week. Ben got that posted today, so that's up if you want to go and find it. A gentle reminder, if you have not, please go to act.credoaction.com and sign on to the AKE Act petition. We need every signature we can possibly get. It is still growing and still going. Tweet it, Facebook it, share it via email, tell your friends and neighbors about it. It'll give you a chance to tell them about the human rights, public health disaster that unfolds a little more every day here in Central Appalachia. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. And, of course, thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACAC, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, .org. And if you would like to learn more about how the ACAC does what it does, you can read the bill at ACAC.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.